You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom. Call me, 866-987-8466, or follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. You know, when you drill down to the center of what most motivates traditional conservatives, you're going to find that they're terrified by the idea of changing the way they view the world. It's a mentality. It's the very thing, I think, that prevented 13th century Europeans from sailing ships too far in any one direction. They were fearful of sailing off the edge of a flat earth. The idea of a flat earth was the only way they could see it. Once they overcame their fear and made it to North America, the conservative American Tories were too terrified to declare independence from Great Britain because that change was too dramatic. A king was all they knew. It's all they could accept. Lord knows how frightening ideas like evolution, the United Nations, Lady Gaga, and President Obama has to be for the diehard conservative. Understand, this was the kind of inflexible, frantic bunch of social political conservatives who wanted to murder Galileo and Copernicus because they had new ideas about how the world worked. Change has always caused suffering for neocons. Lately, conservative leadership has surfaced with a new idea about how they can ease their suffering, that change by simply something called rewrite therapy. It's where they create an alternative reality by rewriting or erasing historical events that cause them any kind of anxiety. Last year, they focused on what they call the Conservative Bible Project. This is a project aimed at removing from the Bible anything that conservatives regard as liberal bias, for God's sakes. For example, the oddballs working on this project tell us that liberals conspired to change the ancient wording of the Bible in such a way that free market thinking was distorted. That's what they said. It was distorted with wording that promotes concepts of socialism, according to this neocon project. They want to see words like laborer or fellow worker or comrade yanked from the Bible. That's change they can believe in, and it's the change that's more in tune with their selfish, centered view of the world. The bleeding heart liberals this gaggle of nuts worry about in the Bible apparently are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, who are responsible for this liberal tone that turns the teachings of Jesus into scary socialist dogma. I mean, just think how terrifying it must be for an old white man's group of billionaires who surround the Koch brothers. How scary it must be to know that the Bible directs us to take care of the least of our society. But change is in the air everywhere, not just there. In Texas, a conservative group of State Board of Education members demanded a rewrite of textbooks. Their argument is that liberals distorted the truth about evolution. They distorted the truth about global climate change. According to that gaggle of Texans, liberals even distorted the truth about the age of McCarthyism. So they actually rewrote their history books to make sure that old Joe McCarthy was made into a great American hero. Joe McCarthy truly was one of their own. It makes sense that those conservative labored thinkers in Texas would want to rewrite the history about McCarthy and conclude that McCarthy was a great man. But those conservatives, the Texas rewrite of those textbooks, let me at least preserve some truth here. Their conservative hero destroyed the lives of hundreds of decent scientists, writers, actors, politicians, and clergy as he created this Cold War hysteria that even dwarfed the Salem witch hunts. In the end, Joe was exposed as a delusional drunk who suffered with paranoia, delirium tremens, and anxiety attacks that caused him at one point to be institutionalized. This is the guy they want to rewrite to make into a hero in Texas. They removed all that bad stuff from the history books. It's rewriting the history to find sanity and decency in the conduct of Crazy Joe. It's the equivalent of the conservatives' effort to reinvent Nixon's Watergate criminal history that we've seen lately. Oh, yeah. That was something they wanted removed from their from those textbooks as well. They wanted the mention of Nixon's Watergate out of there. Think about that the next time you interview a Texas high school graduate for a job. Think about what they're learning there in Texas. Rewrite psychological therapy for the real moonbat wings, that whole part of the party. It's not just in Texas. It's taking place in Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. For example, in Texas, part of the official GOP platform is that there's going to be a prohibition of incorporating critical thinking. They don't want critical thinking in their textbooks. They don't want mention of critical thinking, of teaching critical thinking in textbooks from kindergarten to college. The demented Republicans behind that effort, they say that to teach critical thinking in schools interferes with a parent's ability to control their children. According to these Phyllis Schlafly, Tom DeLay, Rick Perry, Ralph Reed, Jerry Falwell kind of clown car intellectuals, teaching critical thinking encourages rebellion. It promotes the philosophy of iconoclasts who question and even criticize authority. Can you imagine criticizing authority? It's simply too risky, too scary to teach critical thinking to children and even college kids who might learn to color outside the lines. It's not good for political leaders. It's not good for religious leaders and corporate leaders to have our children learn anything more than how to take orders. It makes more sense to promote a generation of dullard minds that are more willing to flip burgers and entertain themselves by following the reality lives of Kim Kardashian and Snooki on Jersey Shore. My suspicion is that they ended critical thinking in Texas decades ago based on what we've seen knocking around in the spacious, empty heads of Texas intellectuals like Rick Perry and Tom DeLay, and that hate preacher from Texas, John Hagee. But this story is not just about Texas. This same anti-intellectualism has grabbed total control of the modern Republican. In Louisiana, the schools actually teach the Loch Ness Monster is alive and well, which somehow is supposed to support creationism. From there, it goes downhill in places like Mississippi and Alabama. The Republican anti-intellectuals have been released everywhere like flying monkeys trying to dumb down America just a little bit more to the level to where Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Glenn Beck actually start looking like geniuses. Oil industry-funded conservative scientists have rewritten science behind global climate change to fit in their corporate master's view of the world, and they've put that in their textbooks in Texas. That's the corporate science they want teaching their children. But it's not just Texas, because those same textbooks are now moved all over the United States. The GOP teabag-type conservatives are pushing education in the same kind of direction that Mao Zedong pushed China when he rewrote the history of China by destroying books and terrorizing intellectuals who disagreed with his view of the world. The same thing that rewrite therapy is doing in places like Texas and even in the platform of the GOP. The political platform of the GOP says, let's not have critical thinking. We're going to be talking about that today. Give me a call, 866-987-8466, or follow me on Twitter. I'll be back with Cliff Schechter when we return.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire. Give me a call, 866-987-8466. We'll be right back. It is Friday. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. I have Cliff Schechter with me, political columnist, best-selling author, and longtime political strategist and a dear friend. Cliff, you still there?
I'm here. How are you, Pap?
Yeah, I remember you wrote an article about the very topic that we're talking about, which is the dumbing down of the GOP.
Yeah. And check your intelligence at the doors, I think what I called it.
What'd you call it?
Check your intelligence at the door.
Okay. What is part of it? As I watch what's happening to Mitt, I mean, it's a lot of it's self-imposed, but he has to appeal to these dummies. And in appealing to the dummies, he's destroying his chances of being elected president.
Yeah, well, I mean, just think about this for a second. I mean, think about a guy that's running for office in a major party whose greatest legislative accomplishment, which was Romney Care, he can't mention it anymore. When one of his spokespeople, Andrea Saul, mentioned it, she got literally attacked from all corners. Ann Coulter called on him to fire her, and I think Rush Limbaugh did too, because they don't believe in governing anymore. It's sort of just this cabal of sort of financial, religious, and imperial interests that all just want, you know, their own piece of the pie. Let me give you a quick example. The best example right now, have you heard what's been going on with this guy with David Barton?
Yeah, a little bit. Go ahead.
So he's an evangelical preacher
yeah.
from Texas.
Yeah.
And he often mixes his preaching with politics because he also is a former co-chair of the Republican
right.
Party in Texas, a consultant there.
And the IRS ought to go into his church and pull any kind of breaks they get for taxes, shouldn't they? But anyway, go ahead.
Of course they should, but he pretends to be a historian. He wrote a book called Jefferson Lies, and it's all about saying that the separation of church and state is a myth, that Jefferson, who everyone who knows anything about history knows was a deist, was really this very religious figure and thought that we should have, that the Constitution was based on the Bible, and he claims that there's all these quotes, but when you look up any of them, you can't find any of them.
Well, that's...
He's been debunked. Finally, his publisher pulled his book because
right.
it's so bad, but yet it's a New York Times bestseller
right.
because all these right-wingers have bought it up. He's gotten to go on in Time magazine. And
oh, they'll have him on the cover of Time. See, that's what's happening. We said this. I just can't stress this enough. The what's happening with traditional media is revolting to me. It's revolting in that you can take a guy like Barton and he can say anything he wants to say, and the media feels like they have to give that some time on the air.
Yep.
Like we have to really, okay, like could the Loch Ness Monster be alive in Louisiana, knows about it, nobody else does? Well, the media would say, yeah, we have to give that some real time. Is it possible that the Earth is only 6,000 years old instead of 4 billion years old?
Right.
And is that possible? Well, the media says, well, yeah, we got to give these nuts as much time as they want. And that's ABC. That's CBS. That's NBC. That's Ann Coulter of all people on talk television on what used to be a responsible talk show talking about politics.
Show where we people get their information.
Well, no more. Who watches that anymore? Who watches Sunday talk anymore unless you're living inside the Beltway? Nobody watches it. Because you have the Ann Coulters, and the point being, here's my point, it doesn't make any difference how crazy it is. That's why in Texas, as I open this, in Texas, they can rewrite textbooks, and they can say that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. They can rewrite Texas and say that Joe McCarthy was a hero, or Watergate never took place.
Right.
We have become so stupid, it's no different than Mao Zedong. If you
it's
think
exactly
about it,
like
Cliff,
a lot of them took their marching orders from that. They wanted to, Weyrich would, you know, Paul Weyrich would say that we should learn something from what Mao did the History News Network, again, this is a group of historians, said that Jefferson Lies, this book by Barton, is the least credible history book in print right now, and now his publisher has withdrawn it, and yet, as you pointed out, he's still getting on these major shows.
He's on talk shows. He's on talk shows. He'll be in Time magazine. Hell, they'll have him on the cover before it's all out. That's how dysfunctional. Listen, if you're hearing this show, turn off your damn television unless you're watching something like Free Speech TV or RT Network or Current. Turn it off. Because it has become nothing more than a delivery service for crazy. And I mean, all you got to do is look. Just look. And the point being, that's why they're very comfortable in Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama. involved in this intellectual dumb down, even teaching their children that they can't, they should not critically think. We're going to have, we're going to have a guest on the air today that's going to talk to you about the details of this. It's not just, it's Cliff, it's not just in the textbooks. It's actually part of the Republican platform. They
right.
put it down on paper in Texas along with all the other crazy things, and they put down there, we don't want our children to critically think. Because
now
it'll arm them to, it'll arm them to be rebellious. It's just
right.
like Barton. Barton can write whatever he wants to write, and the media picks up on it, and all of a sudden, we're, it's in the realm of discussion. Why should it be in the realm of discussion that the earth is actually melting? Why should we still be debating that? Why should we be debating that the earth is 6,000 years old? Because these morons, both in the Republican Party and the moron producers, for mainstream media, allow it to happen. If
That's
you're a
right.
producer working for ABC and you have a friggin' college education, how in the world do you say to yourself, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to bring a guest on here to talk about the idea that climate change isn't real or that creationism is legitimate. Really, the guy, I mean, if you have a college education and you do that, why are you doing it? You're doing it for the money. Nothing, no other reason. 866-987-8466. We'll be back. Let's talk some more about this. Cliff, thanks.
Yep.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio, and for Tom Hartman, follow me at Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. Let's have some fun today. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Mike Papantonio. Sitting in for Tom, it is where despair is not an option. Look, you know what? You don't have to be an environmentalist or a scientist to be concerned about what's happening to the planet when it comes to climate change. The evidence is all around us. The media is ignoring it. Nobody's talking about it. We're putting our head in the sand. But the truth is now the last reports that are coming out are not just something that should cause us concern. It should cause us panic. I have Gaius Publius with me. He's from American Blog. Great discussion on this, guys. There's no question that the elite consensus, I mean, if you take a look at the consensus across the board, they're saying that we have to stay below 2 degrees centigrade from where we are right now, or it has potential to be catastrophic. Take it from there, would you?
Well, yes, exactly right. And of that 2 degrees, we're already going to get 1.5. That's baked in. We've got 0.8 already. We're going to get another 0.8 based on the effects of that. So we don't have a lot of headroom to get to that 2 degrees. I'll say that 2 degrees, according to James Hansen, is too generous. He calls it a long-term disaster as opposed to a short-term disaster.
Well, let's fill that in a little bit. James, we're talking about people that are saying this that have been studying it since the issue came out.
Absolutely.
And they're saying that if we ever get if we get to 3 degrees centigrade, that you have a mass extinction scenario that could play itself out. Did I get that right, or did
you
I overstate it. That?
You got it exactly right, Mike. We have 1.5 already. If we stay below 2, we can avoid horrible things. But at 3 degrees, there's an extinction scenario that says 25 to 50% of the species on the planet will go extinct. Guess what we're on track for? We're on track for 7 degrees right now. We're doing the do-nothing scenario, and it's double the extinction scenario.
Okay, so at 7, I mean, if there's an extinction scenario at 3 degrees, and by the way, this is the consensus of thousands of scientists. This isn't just one guy who sat down and said, hey, let me write this. Let me just put it down on paper and maybe somebody read. This is a consensus of scientists all over the world. We're headed for 7 degrees Celsius.
Yep.
And so what you still have is you have the Tea Party and the Republicans who have been able to round the Tea Party up showing up at and putting on protests anytime the issue of climate change is trying to be addressed. How is it that the Tea Party feels like burning the planet down is such, or the Republicans think it's such a great idea? Where is it, just a money issue, purely a money issue? Or are these people really so misinformed?
Well, yeah, they're really misinformed, but they're also eagerly misinformed because the people who run the Tea Party have been able to frame it as an us versus them. And as your previous segment said, that these are the people that are saying critical thinking is a bad idea. Well, this is why it's a bad idea, because you don't want to unconfuse the masses.
But we're even doing it to the next generation here, guys. Well, as I said, in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, honestly, they're changing their textbooks to where they're saying they're treating global climate change like it's still a debate, that it might actually be taking place, but we don't really know. Well, that's a lie. Every serious scientist except the biostatutes, who are paid for by the industry, agree that it's not a lie. If you're not a biostatute, then you say that this is real. The second thing they say is it's man-made and it can be controlled. So the good news is it is man-made and we can control it. But on the other side of that is McKibben, who's written an awful lot about this. He says you've got people like Rex Tillerson, the CEO of Exxon, who are putting billions of dollars to stop any advancement of getting this under control.
So I would bypass the discussion with the Tea Party. It's just a waste of anyone's time to continue talking about that, except for the scientists whose job it is to engage the deniers, and go right to the PERP. The PERP is the Rex Tillersons. The PERP is the Koch brothers. Go target those people, target their enablers, the high-level enablers in the media, in the science community, in the political community, and unconfuse the people.
Well, you know what? It's an interesting thought, guys. I mean, McKibben, who I have interviewed a couple of times, by the way, and is a brilliant man. Thank goodness he's out there on this issue.
He's done quite a bit.
Oh, he's done an awful lot on understanding this issue. But his theory is that what we need to do is we really need to go after the oil companies. Your theory is, no, that doesn't work. Yeah, we maybe need to go after them, but what we have to do is we have to go after the head of the dragon, and that is the Rex Tillersons, the people, the Koch brothers, who say and have set aside $37 billion, for just nothing but more oil and gas exploration. $100 million a day is what they want to spend. But if you're watching the games right now, the Olympic Games, you're seeing BP giving you the impression that they're spending all this money on alternative research. It's purely a lie, and it's being driven by the Rex Tillersons.
Absolutely. And in fact, it's not just a tactic to go after the Tillersons and the Kochs and all of those people. They are actually the perps. The modern corporation is a wholly owned subsidiary of the will of the CEO class. It's been entirely captured the way governments are captured. So these individuals really are responsible. If you took David Koch out of his chair at Koch Industries and put in somebody with an actual conscience, Koch Industries would turn on a dime.
Well, I'll tell you this. What we have seen is we've seen what they call close action results a lot of times. I remember with we've talked about before, the asbestos litigation, when you had the people, the CEOs, when you know where they live, you know, if they live in Palm Springs, you know where their house is, and you had people showing up in demonstrations in front of the house. You have to go to where they go. If they go to a country club, the demonstration has to be in front of the country club, because they have this protection, don't they, guys? The protection is, well, I'm just the CEO of the corporation. Well, no, because the way, as you point out in your article, corporations loot the nation, CEOs then loot the corporation, and then the CEO takes all that money and does whatever they want to do with it.
It's the story of income disparity in this country. Exactly right.
So the only way you can get there is you have to be up in their face, don't you? I mean, don't you have to do what was done with tobacco and asbestos and some of these other projects where, you know, the CEO said, oh, you know, this is a corporation. Well, you know what? The demonstration was in front of his house. The demonstration was in front of her country club. The people were up in their face because they are the true Kim. These are people, if you think about it, guys, that are willing to burn the whole planet down. That they don't care about your grandchildren. They don't care about your children. If you had somebody who is a direct threat to your family, you would at least do that. You would show up for a discussion with them and say, what are you doing?
At the very least. At the very least. And I'm actually trying to come up with a set of tactics that's even more forceful than that. But absolutely right. You have to target them as individuals, target them hard, and target them persistently. And message to the people so that the people know why they're being targeted and what the price is for letting them get away with it.
Well, the corporation, as you pointed out, is simply, all it is a, it's just an infrastructure for the host criminal.
Yep.
They're the infrastructure for the CEO or the CFO or the COO to use it to whatever they want. I mean, because basically they make all the decisions. They dominate the board. They help appoint the board. They can get done what they want to get done. And the very idea of BP, who, by the way, I live here on the Gulf Coast. We're one of the four law firms in the country handling the case against BP, the national case.
Good for you.
So I see the documents. We know how bad the conduct is. We know that it's not the kind of company who is spending anything on alternative energy sources. They're not out there looking for solar and wind and geothermal. They're simply looking for the next place to drill. And you know what? The next time there's a disaster in the Gulf, they don't even have a better plan then, just like they have no plan to solve the problem as our planet burns up.
And the irony, Mike, is that global warming opens up the Arctic for more drilling. They benefit twice from the problem they're causing. They benefit by selling all that stuff into the air, and then they benefit by having global warming open up new fields for them to exploit. It's obscene. These people are monsters in a way that's like comic book monsters, except we're not in a comic book anymore. We're talking about the extinction of the species because 200 people want to win.
Yeah, I mean, you've pointed out before, and I think this is a great point, that what we allow these Rex Tillersons to do is it's the equivalent of a restaurant piling their garbage piling garbage on the street out in front of the restaurant because they don't want to take it to the dumpster. And so the garbage is, we have to deal with the garbage. What they're doing is extending that responsibility to us. We're out of time here, guys, but I want to tell you, I really do appreciate, keep up the great work. And I want you back on our show on Ring of Fire, and I'm sure Tom will have you back on, to talk about what do we do? What do we do about the Rex Tillersons directly? Because right now, all they're doing is externalizing all of their garbage. They're externalizing their cost. They're externalizing their toxins, their risk to all of us. And we need to do something about it. 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio. We'll be right back, and I'll take your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me at Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom. Let's go to some of these callers. 866-987-8466 is the number. Let's go to Eric in College Park. Eric, you there?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thanks for holding, by the way. All these callers that are holding, we do appreciate it. We will get to you. Go ahead.
No problem. Couple of things. Revisionist history as evidenced in the Texas school Board of Education and also spreading around the country leads to a couple of things. Dumbing down, of course, and kids not being able to critically think, but also it pays way for open fascism. And I think we've got to get to a point where, one, we not only affirm separation of church and state, you know, in terms of free speech, but also in textbook writing as well, because if you look at it, you have this during the Reagan years, when all of these nuts came into play, you had this whole thing where textbooks were getting wrote and reviewed by all of these
ideologues. Yeah, yeah.
And now all of a sudden, it's becoming around the country. And my whole point is, this should have been stopped. And the reality of it is, there's no way in the world.
Eric, let me pick up with where you left off. Here's the point. The points you're making are great points. If you were to follow fascism, I don't care whether it was Germany, Italy, Spain, wherever fascism rose up, one thing that had to happen for fascism to take place is you had to have a poorly educated public. You had to have a public that was willing to buy into anything that was being sold to them. That was one part of it, along with the idea of having a media that was willing to spread that stupidity. You had to have a media that could do that. The other thing you had to have is you had to have industrialists who had enough money to back that whole machine. The other thing you had to have is most of the time you had to have them rallying around something like religion. And then most importantly, you had to have them rallying around nationalism. So if you take all those parts, the great quote, when fascism comes to America, it'll have a flag in one hand and a Bible in the other. There's a lot of truth to that. But add to that this: when it comes to America, America will be so stupid and so dumbed down that these people who want to dumb down the country will have an easier way to spread their word. That's the sad truth. Ted in Little Rock, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My deal is, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The frustration level amongst Americans, just working class people, regardless of their what party they go with, they're getting to the point where we've talked to our representatives, we've wrote our representatives, I've stood right up in front of mine and talked to them, and they act like I'm some kind of idiot and think that I'm just, you know, some dumb guy, and they'll just blow me off. But, you know, this country was founded on freedom from tyranny and taxation without representation, and that's exactly where we are now. And what do we do? I mean,
well, let me answer the question. First of all, the country was founded more. Yeah, that was part of it, Ted. But the country was also founded on community, and community means that we have to tax. Taxes are necessary. Now, you have the right wing out there saying every time we turn around is tax this and tax that, taxation without representation. I'm just, you know, if I hear that again, I think I'll gag. But what it comes down to is what everybody misses is this country was also founded on a sense of community and a sense of responsibility to each other. That is, we would take care of the least of our society. We would also be fair at all levels. There was no class distinction to where we wouldn't be fair with between the classes. Now, that was the idea. That was the perfect setup for a democracy. We're no longer there. Where we are right now is it's a division in this country that is divided on the very topic you're talking about, something as simple as taxes. We have to have taxes. We have to have roads paid for and bridges. And are we always going to have perfect representation? No, we're not. We're never going to have perfect representation. But, we still have responsibility to understand that if we want to have roads that are nice, if we want to have police departments and teachers that can educate our children, and we don't want everything privatized, then we have to pay taxes. If we want to engage in wars in countries where the war isn't necessary and the public makes the choice, that's where we have to go. We have to go to Afghanistan. We have to go to Iraq. Then we have to pay for that. That is the sad reality. There's no way around that unless you are a sovereign nation type who believes that you don't have any responsibility, that we live in a damned anarchy here in the United States. Mark in Occupy Seattle, you there?
Yeah, Mike, this is Mark Taylor Canfield. I'm also a blogger at Huffington Post. It was really good to meet you in Seattle for the AM 1090 forum.
And that was a fun forum, wasn't it? I really enjoyed that.
Yes. And I mentioned my Declaration of Independence from Wall Street document there, so I'll make sure that you get a copy of that because I'd love to get your comment. I really love your work at Ring of Fire. It's such a refreshing show to hear somebody really telling it like it is. And today I want to thank you for your opening statement about the right-wing intellectual or anti-intellectual mentality that we've been trying to fight in this country for so many decades because – really, you know, it all comes down to where is the money coming from? And as a journalist, I realize that a lot of folks on the right get away with saying whatever they want. But, you know, there's a lot of progressives or so-called liberals who get canned or suspended because of things that they tweet or things they might write in their blog.
Oh, I know.
So I think there's really a bias there, you know.
Mark, I got about 30 seconds. You are right. Let me tell you, you're lucky to live in Seattle. What a wonderful place. You ought to live down here in the South. And your ideas that we should all be willing to embrace about how we live together on this planet, they seem to be flourishing. When I was in Seattle with Tom Hartman and Randy Rhodes and Ron Reagan and Sam Cedar, we had a great time because we were surrounded with people that were very, very critical, very much critical thinkers. 866-987-8466. We'll be back. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman.
Listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio standing in for Tom. Corporate money is flowing into the Beltway like a fire hose, and that's because of Citizens United. But what's happening right now is the secretive nature of the PACs. On one side, you have Obama that is disclosing kind of how all this bundling takes place, who are the names, what are their connections. Mitt Romney on the other end, just like he's hiding his taxes, just like he's hiding his offshore banking in, business, just like he's hidden just about everything that we need to know before we vote for him, is also hiding the information about who he's bundling all this PAC money with. I've got Craig Holman with Public Citizens, government affairs lobbyist. Craig, do you have any caveats or corrections to that?
Oh, no, Mike, you're hitting it right on the nail, and I appreciate the analogy between Romney hiding his taxes and hiding his bundlers. You know, this is a phenomenal development. When it comes to candidate fundraising, as opposed to the outside fundraising where the corporations just launder their money through outside groups, when it comes to candidates trying to raise money, they rely extensively on a powerful tool called bundling, where they get their wealthy friends to go out and raise $5,000, the legal contribution limit, from each individual. And if they raise like 100 of those, they walk into a campaign office with literally $500,000 and turn over this bundled contribution of $500,000.
This bundling activity,
by the way, is done especially by lobbyists who are trying to buy influence with these lawmakers.
Right. I mean, how is it that this is something that we could keep secret when you have a candidate who may win office, and then all of a sudden we want to know, well, what kind of favors did you do for Joe Smith? Well, first of all, we didn't know Joe Smith gave you $10,000. And now we find out that you're giving Joe Smith a government contract. I mean, isn't that the kind of information we should know about? I mean, at the very heart, shouldn't the FEC, I mean, of all people that ought to be looking over this, it ought to be the FEC, even though it is a wholly dysfunctional, miserably failed agency. Sometimes shouldn't they give us that kind of information?
It is rather frightening, isn't it, Mike? I mean, literally when it comes to bundling activity, we don't know what's going on. With the Honest Leadership and Open Government Act of 2007, we were able to impose a partial disclosure if the bundler happens to be a lobbyist. But if the bundler is a CEO of a corporation or someone else is not a registered lobbyist, we're not going to know who's footing the bill.
Well, I mean, how about something is, I mean, this is basic logic. If you have, for example, a foreign country, some foreign country that has something that they want to gain from us, that foreign country, then we may be, that could be sort of part of the super PAC money. It could be bundled right into the super PAC money, couldn't it?
Yeah, it certainly could be. And, you know, to just highlight the favors that are delivered to bundlers, you know, it's difficult to measure things like regulatory deregulation or certain legislation, but there is one very concrete measurement, and that is the appointment of ambassadorships. When we take a look and other government positions, take a look at the Bush administration. Literally a quarter of all his bundlers received appointments to key cabinet posts or senior executive appointments or to ambassadorships.
Was that the pioneer group?
Right.
If you were a pioneer, you could become an ambassador.
Right? The pioneers and the rangers. And you know something, that is the least damaging type of quid pro quo that I could imagine. You know, so they buy an ambassadorship, and literally that is what they're doing. But what are all the other bundlers getting in exchange for their $500,000? That's what's truly frightening.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you, Effie, I mean, thank goodness for public citizens. Let me just say that straight up, Craig. Thank goodness
that.
Public citizens is out there. But one thing I saw that you're talking about several times. I've seen articles come out from public citizens where you are so incredibly. You take the FEC. And you take these incredible stories about their inability to enforce virtually anything where it comes to election process. And I'm wondering, what are you putting pressure on Obama about actually filling the void in the FEC, which he hasn't done for, what, 3 years now?
Yes, I've been trying that since 2009.
Tell us that story. Give us the backstory.
I've been very disappointed that Obama has not carried through and tried fixing the FEC. But the bottom line is this is a six-member commission that runs our elections. And to make any decision, they have to get four votes. It's three Republicans, three Democrats. Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid essentially appoint the Republican and the Democratic members. Mitch McConnell has learned the way to derail campaign finance law. He can't do it with us. He can't do it with the American people or with Congress. What he can do is he appoints three Republicans on that FEC that refuse to enforce the law. And he has done exactly that. We've now seen the number of deadlock votes, which means nothing's happened out of the FEC, skyrocket literally eightfold since Mitch McConnell made his Republican appointments.
But, Craig, it doesn't have to happen like that. I mean, Obama can do something about that. Right now, don't you have you've got five of the six FEC commissioners that are in a lame duck status right now, aren't they?
Five of the six commissioners, their terms have expired literally a year ago.
Okay,
and
what would you want Obama to do? If you were to say, President Obama, you're really dropping the ball here. This is costing democracy. What does he need to do?
He can appoint new commissioners. He could just appoint new ones to those five posts. The problem is he's got to then get it through the Senate. But, man, that's a fight worth taking. I mean, take on Mitch McConnell on this one. The FEC, by not enforcing the law, by developing regulations that provide no disclosure of where this money is coming from, that's the key to the problem here.
Have you written, has the public citizens met with President Obama and said, look, not only is the Wall Street, your inability to get Wall Street under control bothersome to us, that you haven't prosecuted anybody yet. You saw the story again today, no prosecution of Goldman Sachs again.
Right.
And so not only does that bother progressives, but we know that you have the ability to do something about FEC and you've done nothing. Have you had that conversation with him?
We have met with the White House staff, not with Obama personally.
What is the message that you give them?
The message is this is a battle worth taking. If Obama wants to stand for campaign finance reform, this is where it's got to begin. You know, and we don't know if he'd be able to get it through Mitch McConnell, but it almost doesn't matter at this point. Take on this battle. It is worth the battle.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things that they're going to be difficult, but you have to be in a pushback mode to do that. Tell us what the FEC allows to happen in its current mode. We've got about a minute. Tell me what it is, the worst things that are happening with this existing FEC.
Two really bad things. First, the FEC has decided not to enforce the disclosure law. We actually have a good disclosure law in the books where we would know where all this money is coming from, but the FEC won't implement that. The second thing is the FEC won't enforce any other aspect of the campaign finance law. Literally, they deadlock on every major enforcement decision, and as a result, super PACs, nonprofit groups, Karl Rove, know they can really do anything they want, and there's no one who's going to slap their wrists for doing it.
You know, it sounds familiar with so many of the other agencies that we have in Washington right now. 866-987-8466, or follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom. Let's take some of these calls. Let's go to Bob in Oklahoma. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, Mike. Appreciate you filling in there. Could I just comment about something?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. We're talking about fascism, growing tendency of corporate fascism in this country. It is alive and well in place and trickling down the ladder. I'm from Oklahoma. The oil and gas people control this state. It doesn't, you know, we have no representation, and it's happening. And they're patrolling our friendly skies as well. They're not for the farmer. There's nobody in this state that's for the farmer, or there would be a huge hemp movement in this state. It wouldn't be allowed. They'll shut you down. They'll run you off the road. They'll break in your house, and they'll kill you if they have to shut you up that way.
Bob, let me address something. You hit a couple of important points. First of all, one thing you said, I mean, what you're describing is you have an industry that's behind that movement that you describe as fascism in Oklahoma. I spend that much time in Oklahoma, nor that do I intend to, but it's probably not much different than what I see here in North Florida. But in between, any time you have a true fascist, very, very conservative political agenda, you have to have big money behind it. Now, wherever you go in the world, whether it's, as I said before, whether it's, you know, Hitler didn't have, could never have launched his ugly agenda without the industrialist behind him. You understand that? The industrialists were the people who launched true fascism in Germany. Same thing happened in Italy, same thing happened in France, same thing happens in South America. Why do the industrialists do that? The industrialists do that because they want to gain control over the population. They don't want the population saying, I want paid better wages, I want better safety, I want a pension program, I don't want you to ruin our streams and our air. So when you take the population and you get them under control, then that's the first step. That's one of the steps. You have to control the population. And you'll always find big money behind that. You know, these folks that are, you know, smoking big cigars and drinking martinis in their country clubs, those are the people who have every interest in taking their corporation and implanting the way they run their corporation on the population there, whether it's Oklahoma, whether it's North Florida, wherever it is. So it's always the same methodology. There's rarely much of a difference. George in Oak Harbor, Washington, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about a document I've seen online. It's Freedom 1776. It's they show Obama saying that he is a Kenya. He was born in Kenya. They have his wife saying the same thing. I don't know how they put these things together. I don't believe a word of it.
Well, of course not, George. But there are people who do believe it. It's called the dummy factor. There really is the term they use. It's the dumb. You have people that are sitting in offices in Madison Avenue right now, George, and they have a term they use. It is called the dummy factor. It is people who are so stupid, they literally don't even know they're stupid, like we talked about yesterday. Today, the new stupid talk is that Obama was married to a man before he became married to Michelle. Now, you or I might listen to that and say, my God, that's so stupid. Anybody with even half a brain would say that's stupid. But they understand that there is that dummy factor that people, some part of the population, will buy into it. Now, what happens? After that part of the population buys into it, it bounces to the next stage and the next stage. And before you know it, you can't get rid of the dummy idea. Like, for example, that Obama was born in Kenya, or that Obama doesn't have a birth certificate, he's not an American citizen, or he's a Manchurian candidate, or that Obama has a UN army getting ready to come over to the United States and take our guns. You're dealing with the public right now, George, that reads and comprehends on a sixth grade level. And if you told a sixth grader that Obama was married to a man before he married Michelle, that sixth grader might believe him. It's the same public that watches Dancing with the Stars and American Idol and Snooki on Jersey Shores. Same public that follows the Kim Kardashian to see what the hell she's going to wear to the beach tomorrow. That's what you're dealing with. So even though you may say, well, who would believe such a thing? Who would make up such a thing? In Madison Avenue, these are smart guys. They're very smart people on Madison Avenue. And they play to the dummy card because they know the dummy card has the ability to take hold. That's why we're still talking about Obama's birth certificate today. That's why we'll be talking in a month. The mainstream media will be asking, well, I wonder if Obama really was married to a man before he became married to Michelle. That's our mainstream media playing the dummy card, too. They're all dummies. They all fit into the dummy scenario. Arthur in North Carolina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Yes, what I'm calling is as far as, I've been out a long time, and this is the first time, but in any event, I'm a believer in the global warming. There's no doubt about it. However, when I hear about that we don't have an energy policy, this is the thing that really gets to my goat. I mean, we've got 8 million heavy trucks on the road today hauling freight and et cetera. We have unlimited supply of natural gas in this country as it stands right now without any fracking going on, anything else that we need to be doing.
Okay, what's your point? I got 30 seconds, Arthur. Close it up.
All
what's
right,
your
my point? My point is to convert these vehicles to CNG. They're 30% cleaner, and it's environmentally friendly. What?
We all need to be thinking about things like that. I'm out of time. I'll be back. 866-987-8466. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me at Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. Let me know what you're thinking. I'll be back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom today. You have municipalities now. You have states. You have cities, towns of every description that are having to file bankruptcy because of the new austerity idea that has been driven by Grover Norquist and the Republicans for so long. Well, be careful what you ask for because you might get it. And as they move into their austerity disaster, what happens to things like municipal bonds? What happens to investors who think that they're safe investing into a municipal bond? Thomas Ferguson is professor of political science at University of Massachusetts, contributing editor to Alternet, just all-around smart guy. Tom, let me ask you something, Tom. What is it that that we missed when we figured out that you have to have money on the streets in order for municipalities to flourish?
I don't think you missed anything. That's, you've got to have some cash to run town. And, you know, I would, though, one comment, which is that we've had sort of a disastrous sequence of policies for years now under several administrations. And at the same time, I wouldn't want to overstress too much just how many some cities and some states are clearly facing real problems, but the story that everybody's on the edge of default or something like that is frankly political hype, usually intended to try to sort of just cut expenditures so they can cut taxes. And I'd be a little wary of folks talking all the time about municipal bankruptcy, even though it's a problem.
Well, if you're an investor and you say, look, I want to put my money in tax-free municipal bonds, okay? I don't want to play the market anymore. I want to make 3 or 4% tax-free, and you think it's safe. And then all of a sudden you start hearing what's going on in California, where some of these bonds used to be rated pretty well. And now they're saying, wait, let me get this right. You're going to go out of business. You're going to declare bankruptcy. There's going to be a reorganization. What's going to happen to my bond? It's pretty scary stuff. I mean, you have to admit.
Yep. Well, it's absolutely scary. But you got thousands and thousands of municipalities, cities, and regional authorities. And a lot of those are just not going bust. And the reason I'm harping on this, is that I ran a calculation the other week. And I tried to compute the average interest on state and municipal bonds. And what I found astonished me, which is that they'd hardly dropped at all since 2006 or so. And actually, interest rates on these things had been rising a lot. You say, wait a minute, why bother about this? Well, actually, what happened to interest rates after 2008 is they fell off a cliff. You know, the Federal Reserve is essentially doing money to banks at just over zero. And
yeah,
most rates, to say the federal government and a lot of even home mortgages are fair, if you can get one. I mean, which not reflected in the actual, the difficulty of getting one not reflected in the published price. Rates have gone way down. And what really captured my attention was state and municipalities have interest rates. They've been paying very high rates. Now, how has this miracle been accomplished? And, you know, I've been looking around, and I'm not clear. It's not clear to me, and I completely understand what's
okay,
going
Tom,
on.
Okay, Tom, let me get us on another track, okay? Because let me talk to you about the big points here. Here's one big point that is very obvious to me. You have cities and states that are, for example, California, where they have Proposition 13. They can't raise more revenue. You have, okay, so, and we were talking about this years ago. If a state comes in and they don't allow the governing agency to raise taxes, to find revenue, this very thing that's happening right here has a tendency to play itself out. Isn't that what we're seeing in California to some degree?
Yeah, well, you're certainly seeing that, but the big story here is the collapse in national income and the failure of the economy to recover. You know, even with Proposition 13, California wasn't going underwater 8 or 10 years ago. I mean, the problem here is that you've had a weak economy since 2008 and, frankly, insufficient efforts by the federal government to stimulate it. Or in other words, put it in simple English, not much done about unemployment by anybody, Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Where this leaves us is, you know, very low levels of economic growth, just barely above zero, maybe, you know, less than 1% probably. And in some states, that's really scary. You know, then you get caught in your Proposition 13 trap. you were just talking about. Yeah.
You have to have money. You have to have money on the streets in order for a municipality to survive. Tom, we're having a problem on this end. I think it's a connection in the line. I don't know whether it's weather or not. I'm going to move on to calls, and we're going to pick up with this topic. But the material that you've written about this, the scary future of municipal bankruptcy, is great material. Because what it's telling us is this. It's telling us that we've made bad policy decisions. When we tell our legislators, when we tell the governor and people in legislature that they can't raise money, or that we have to cut, but we can't have anything coming on the revenue side, because, for example, in Florida, this is a real problem. In Florida, what you have is you have an elderly population in some parts of the state. They've educated their children, so they don't want to pay that extra tax for school. They don't want to pay that extra tax that might improve the infrastructure of the state. They're here to retire. They're here in their golden years. So they're not really – their first impression is, why do I want to pay any more taxes? Why do I want to do anything? I'm down here to retire. I'm down here to – in my golden years. I don't want to be part of that growth program. And when you get a state like that – and there's parts of California like that, too. When you get that mentality that I've raised my children, therefore I don't care about school anymore. I've used the roads already. You don't drive that much anymore. My most productive years are behind me. When that mentality hits, it's very, very dangerous. Let me go to John in Elk City, Oklahoma. John, are you there?
Hi. Yeah, I am, Mike.
Go ahead.
How are you?
Doing fine, thank you. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
All right, we've got an excellent Democratic senator here, Tom Ivester, but what I wanted to call about was our governor, Mary Fallon, her first couple weeks in office, the first thing she did was went on vacation to the Bermudas while enacting a law that basically eviscerated the EPA here. And we have many super sites in the state to where people are getting cancer. There's all kinds of long-standing issues with our water, with our air supply, with all kinds of things, and nobody cares because the money that's brought into here that creates jobs is from the petroleum industry.
Yeah, they don't care. There's a whole area, as you probably know, right along the coast of Louisiana. It's called Cancer Alley. And I always want to ask myself, when you drive there, you almost can't breathe. It's almost that bad to where you can't breathe. And when I drive through there, I wonder, okay, I'm glad you're making money, but what about your children? What about your health? What about this environment? What about the next generation? That's what we have become. We have become a me generation. As a matter of fact, I'm part of the baby boomer generation, for example. With the baby boomers, there's a subclass of the baby boomer generation that for the most part did a lot of good coming up. You know, they did a lot of good on issues like civil rights, on women's rights. They did a lot of good. But there's that subset of it. It was called the yuppie me generation. And the yuppie me generation is able to turns a blind eye to the next generation. It's almost as if they completely have disconnected from the next generation as long as they're comfortable today. I want to make money in that cancer alley along Louisiana, but there's no thought about what about my children? How's their health? There are so many cancer clusters between there and where you live there in Oklahoma that I've lost count. As you probably know, Bobby Kennedy and I handled a large number of those environmental cases for so long, but then it became so difficult because you had governmental agencies that were being told by governors to shut down the lawsuit, where we had children dying of leukemias that were completely, utterly tied in to the toxins in that cluster area. So there's no riddle here. The truth is we're selfish, and we're so damn selfish that we don't care about our children. We can sit at a table, have dinner with our children, look across the table, and understand if you're living in an area like Cancer Alley in Louisiana, you're killing your child. They may not die today, but 20 years from now, when these cancers manifest themselves, there's a latency issue, look back and understand that you did nothing to help them. You did nothing to save their lives. Why? Because you were interested in you at the moment. And there's no other way to, you cannot pass this buck. It's the unfortunate truth. Those people who live around that cancer alley, yeah, they're making money, but is it worth it 20 years from now? That's the question they have to ask themselves. 866-987-8466. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be back. Welcome back to Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, in for Tom Hartman today. You know, hey, let me just make an announcement. I'm not warm and fuzzy, okay? I don't, you know, sometimes I'm politically tactless. But I got to answer this. Dino Marino, you're driving me nuts with your tweets. So here's what you ask me. Is Obama the worst president in history? No. Let me tell you who the worst I can give you was your guy, my friend. Mr. Bush, the little shrub, the little AWOL shrub who sent everybody to war except himself, who was AWOL while all of his buddies were being shot up in Vietnam. That was one of the guys. The guy who wouldn't read his presidential information letter on August 13th, and he allowed 3,000 Americans to be murdered on American soil because he was so damn stupid. Because that's the president that I would call one of the worst. I would call him one of the worst because he lied us into a war where American soldiers were murdered and slaughtered for no other reason other than his stupidity and Dick Cheney's hubris. So when you call me or when you email me and you ask me a question like that, let me answer it. It's George Bush, the president who burned down our economy because he didn't understand economics for one, and because he was such a crook that he allowed Wall Street to trample on decency in this country. You're asking me who is the worst president? That's the worst president. The guy who created an underclass that was so bad that 30% of America's wealth shifted from the middle class to the upper 1% in 8 years while he was president. That's the guy who's the worst president. So don't email me and expect me, or tweet me and expect me not to respond to that. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. This is not Rush Limbaugh you're talking about, where you can talk stupid talk to me. I'm not Glenn Beck, where you can call in with starry-eyed stupid talk and not have me respond. So Dino Marino, you got your answer there, baby. Let's go to Mark in New York. You there? Mark in New York.
Yeah, I'm here. I couldn't agree with you more than 1,000% on what you just said. I think Romney doesn't have a tax problem so much as he got a donation problem. I think he may have donated to Planned Parenthood, and if those things are ever found out, he's toast.
He's got more than that, Mark. Look, here's what Romney has. Here's the problem Romney has. First of all, Romney has – today we learn to – no, yesterday or day before that and the day before that, he won't give us his tax returns because he's hiding around the fact that we know that his tax returns will probably have people with Bain Capital indicted. That's what that's about. I don't want to dress that up. I've been at this business a long time. I've seen what corporate types do. They hide money and they do it in a way that they don't want to get caught. It's not about Mitt Romney. He's hiding his money because he's going to get caught just like the other Bain Capital people. You hide your money offshore in third world banana republic banks because you have something to hide. You put them in offshore banks because you can move money around and shell games to where nobody can follow it. And here's the problem with that. When you put your money in a third world offshore bank, what you're doing is you're putting it with money, and this is not me talking, this is every study that's been done on these Banana Republic offshore banks. You're putting your money with drug hustlers, with armament hustlers, with white slavery hustlers that are moving money all over the world and hiding it in offshore banks, just like Mitt Romney is doing. There's no way this man could ever in a thousand years give up his taxes, because we learned just with one tax return that he took $102 million and put it in his IRA in 15 years. It's mathematically impossible to do that. We learned that he had taken blind trust and changed the name on the blind trust to his wife's name the day before he became governor, so we couldn't find out where the trust money came from. The man is in a corner. And it's not, there's nobody to blame but Mitt Romney. Every day we're learning a little bit more about Mitt Romney, and it's terrifying to think that out of 300 million people in this country, the best the Republicans could come up with is Mitt Romney. That is a hell of a statement about the status of the Republican Party in 2012. Let me go to Jeff in Kentucky. Jeff, are you there? Chris in Chicago. Chris, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I'm calling about the LIBOR rate.
All right, go ahead. Calling about LIBOR, he's gone. We have another bad connection. Let me talk about LIBOR. People don't understand why LIBOR is so important. Here's what LIBOR did. You had 12 banks in the UK. You had 12 banks in the UK. And those banks would set an average, and the average would determine how much interest rates would go out for that particular day. Here's what they do. They'd say, today we borrowed money at a particular interest rate, and therefore we can set an interest rate based on what we're representing is that borrowed money. Now, here's the problem. Here's what happens when the thugs get together and they lie. First of all, they make about anywhere between $5-10 million an hour doing that. But the second thing that happens is you have two classes of people all over the world. You have the savers and you have the speculators. Now, this is how it works. The speculator wants interest rates at some time to be low. Now, Barclay, for example, is also in the speculation business. They have times that they want interest rates low so they can go buy things up, and they want to do it at a low interest rate. And you have the savers, mom and pop, who want to save. They want to put their money in things like municipal bonds. They want interest rates. They want to make more money on those interest rates. The mom and pop people, they're the people who typically get clobbered when you have a bunch of thugs in places like the UK and Wall Street here in the United States that are setting interest rates based on a scam. They should be in prison. And you know what? Watch Eric Holder. He will cave in. He will cave in on this just like he did on the Wall Street burn down where they stole $18 trillion from mom and pop. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman, 866-987-8466. I'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Tom Hartman Show. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. Can you imagine being so embarrassed by the man you elected president for 8 years? Being so embarrassed as a Republican Party, as an entire political party, you're so embarrassed that you won't invite him to the convention. Understand, George Bush, it's not that he didn't want to come. They're so embarrassed of what he did to this country that they're unwilling to even invite him to this convention. They don't want Dick Cheney anywhere around this convention. They want us to forget that when Obama came into office, that he inherited a disaster. They want us to forget that the little shrub, who, as I've said so many times, was so incompetent that he took this country to the abyss economically, morally, spiritually, and politically. Took us to the very edge of an abyss. This was a little shrub who inherited a surplus of $600 billion and left us with a $3 trillion deficit. So Mr. Tweeter, Dino Marino, who won't tweet back, I hope I've made my point about who the worst president in my mind in the history of America might be. I think you understand. Right now, there is an FDA, as we've talked about so many times this week so far, that is dysfunctional. And whether it's Vioxx, Fosamax, Yaz, you name it, FDA failure after failure. Newest is Pradaxa. We have an FDA that is useless as far as it comes to protecting your health. It's almost we're living in a self-help environment where you can't even take the advice of a doctor about a prescription because the doctor most of the time has been lied to by the pharmaceutical company about the safety of the drug that he wants to give you. They've covered up the clinicals. They've gamed the system to where they've actually hired biostitutes who can be bought at universities to write favorable literature about their drug simply so they can sell the drug. Sometimes the industry themselves writes the literature and simply has the biostitute sign off on that particular medical literature. This is a case that is remarkable to me. It's a mesh sling that women have been is being put in women's bodies that is changing their life in horrible kinds of ways. I have Robert Price with me. Robert's an attorney handling these cases of faulty transvaginal mesh products. It is a dismal, ugly story. Robert, is the story getting any better? The last time I heard, the numbers of reported cases of disasters with these products continued to grow.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, the story has gotten a little bit better. Just in the past year, we have some substantial developments, not only in the court systems, but a little bit on the regulatory planes, thanks to some interest groups really pushing and, you know, the legal community ourselves pushing lawsuits at these manufacturers.
Tell us what the transvaginal mesh product is, how it's being put into women's bodies, and what a medical disaster it is.
Mike, a transvaginal mesh product is simply a large piece of polypropylene, just a synthetic mesh that's been woven and it's been prepackaged and put into a kit to be handed to a doctor to implant in women who have stress urinary incontinence or pelvic organ prolapse.
And what is that typically from?
Well, typically that'll happen to a woman after she's had a child, most commonly. It's childbearing women, and as you know, a childbirth can cause some trauma in the pelvic region, can cause some changes in the muscle and the organ dynamics, and what'll happen is you'll have some prolapse there, or you'll have...
What is a prolapse?
Prolapse is actually the downward descent of pelvic organs. It's organs such as the bladder or the urethra or a combination of different women's pelvic organs in the vaginal area. It can be an embarrassing problem. And
now, Robert, you said the product is handed to doctors to put in women's bodies. Do these doctors, are they surgeons? Do they have special training on how to do this? Or is this... A lot of times we see doctors handed products like this, almost like it's a prepackage. Anybody can do it. Go to 2 days of school and you can learn how to put this in a woman's body. Is that what happened here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The companies would like you to believe that these are specialized procedures, but the only specialties being conducted here are the sales tactics and the backdoor handshakes that are being done at OBGYN clinics and places like that. These things are just being passed out, and they're being told, doctors are being told that these products are safe, they're effective, You can put them in any woman who's had any of these problems, regardless of the other things out there. So what happens is doctors all over the country are putting these things in because the companies themselves are lying. They're lying to the doctors. They're lying to the patients. They're lying to everybody. Lying to the FDA, but frankly, the FDA doesn't care because they've never required any studies on them.
Wait, say that again.
I'm sorry. Frankly, the FDA hasn't really cared because the FDA has never required any studies on them.
The FDA has never had the transvaginal mesh study. Is that what you just told me?
Yeah, that's correct. As I'm sure you know, Mike, the 510K process, any manufacturer can basically clear a market to be put on the product if they claim to the FDA that the product that they're putting out is substantially equivalent to something else that's out there on the market. And this has been going on for the past 10 years. Each one of these companies has just been saying, well, this mesh is just like this mesh, so let's put it out. Well, this one's just like this. And this has been going on for 10 years.
Okay, so it falls under this special requirement, this special break, and the FDA says, okay, well, we know you're going to put this mesh product into a woman's body. No special training. It's a package. We haven't tested it ourselves. We don't know whether the damn thing's safe, what it'll do, but go ahead and put it in a woman's body. And the end of that is the short list that I can recall from reading your material is erosion of the vaginal epithelium, infection that sometimes where you have incontinence, where you have the bowel or the bladder blood vessels that are perforated. You have sometimes the entire, all of that then it extrudes through all different parts of the woman's pelvic region. Is that about right? The point being, this is not something that stays in place like it's supposed to. It simply falls out sometimes.
Well, yes, you've basically got it correct. What this stuff is it will become implanted. Now, this is inside the tissue of the vaginal area. This is probably the most sensitive place on a woman, and this woman is receiving this plastic polypropylene mesh. It gets inserted, it gets implanted, and what happens is this mesh starts to bond with tissue and the body starts to undergo an inflammatory foreign body response. And it's just a nightmare from there.
What do they do when it goes bad? I mean, more surgery, more of the same. We got about 1 minute. Tell me what happens.
What happens is that the woman goes back to the doctor that implanted it. The doctor is often dumbfounded because he was never warned of what could happen, and the woman has to undergo excruciating surgeries to try to remove these pieces of mesh, and it's a nightmare scenario. Once a woman has a mesh product and that mesh product goes wrong, she's in for a lifetime.
That's it.
Pain.
Robert Price, thanks for joining me. Keep us informed about this that keeps developing. 866-987-8466. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter. We'll be right back.
I need a big weekend.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Give me a call, 866-987-8466. Let me get to some of these callers. Thank you, by the way, callers, for being patient and holding. I see everybody's holding, and I appreciate that. Tim in Portland, you there?
I am. Earlier you were talking about the municipality bankruptcies, and at the same time there's all these city managers, emergency management laws in Michigan, and I'm sure there are other things that are happening across the United States too, but this, to me, just all of a sudden I had this picture. It seemed like a logical progression of the mercantile class doesn't manufacture anything anymore. So, like, financial managers invest overseas and whatnot. The only thing that seems that the capitalists want to invest in now is the takeover of municipalities.
Let me address that. First of all, for private industry, a lot of ways, private industry is going to benefit by municipalities in states being unable to pay for things like prisons and schools. Because what you're going to do is you're going to have the private industry come in here and say, we can do it better. So they're going to come in and they're going to do, as a matter of fact, in most parts of this country, you already have private investors that are buying sections of interstates and bridges and things that the government used to own, and they're putting up toll booths. They're privatizing virtually everything, and the way to do that is to put a state in a situation to where they don't have any wiggle room, where they can't pay for the prisons, so the private investor comes in and says, well, let us do that. They can't pay for the schools, so they do the same thing there. It is a buy-up situation. The first part of your statement was very correct, and that is that we don't make anything anymore. We have exported all of our manufacturing jobs because the smart guys on Wall Street figured that we could have it done in China cheaper, and that somehow we were going to inure a benefit here in the United States. They knew there was going to be no benefit here in the United States except to them, to the CEOs, to the shareholders at the very top of the food chain. They were going to do well. We were going to lose all our workers, and we weren't going to manufacture anything. So instead, what ended up happening is we're now a society that we don't make money by making things, by making cars and bridges and to the rate that we used to. Instead, what we do is we make CDOs and synthetics and swaps. We make toxic trash. And the only people who make money on the toxic trash are the people on Wall Street who don't make anything. They don't use their hands except to take money in this process, to take taxpayer money indirectly, and to take money from things like CDOs and synthetics and swaps, because it used to be Wall Street actually was involved in trying to manufacture things. They would promote a manufacturing industry. You would have investment bankers that thought it was a good idea to buy a company that wanted to manufacture clothes in the United States. Used to be. But now those investment bankers have even gone overseas. So we're no longer the type of society that manufactures and makes tangible goods. We make toxic trash. And that's where Wall Street makes so much money. Desmond in Fort Wayne, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to call and thank you, Mike and Tom, for kind of sounding the alarm there about what's going on with the FDA. And I think what you see at the FDA as far as industry insiders being placed into positions of oversight is kind of endemic. It's prevalent throughout the National Labor Relations Board, all the way through banking and finance. People really need to wake up and be aware. And this election is so critical in that respect, because what you are going to see with a Romney victory is that on overload. And we've seen where putting industry insiders at the top of regulatory agencies has gotten us the last 10, 15, even 30 years. We want to go back to the early Reagan administration. So I really commend you guys for getting the word out there, but I think it needs to be carried a little bit more mainstream, you know?
Well, it won't happen. I get an email today. I get these emails all the time from all over the country constantly. And the latest emails I've been getting is, why isn't traditional media covering the story that Tom Hartman talked about a month ago? And that is that Mitt Romney had got 40% of the startup money for Bain Capital from the El Salvador hit squads, from the oligarchs who were involved in the blood money, where 75,000 people were murdered down in El Salvador so the industrialists could maintain control down there. Where did Mitt Romney go to get his money? He went to El Salvador. That sounds like a pretty damned important story. So the emails I get is, why are the mainstream medias not talking about that? And my response is, fortunately, the mainstream media is on its way out. Fortunately, you have citizens media where people do turn into shows like Tom Hartman or Ed Schultz talk radio show, or Ed Schultz even on MSNBC. They get information the places that they can expect to get good information. turn on ABC on Sunday morning talk sometimes, where we're supposed to be finding out what is the status of politics in this country, and look how dumbed down that has become. One thing I think about is where Stephanopoulos was confronted with the issue of Reid accusing Mitt Romney of not paying taxes for 10 years. Rince Priebus said, oh, Reid was lying. Stephanopoulos never even had enough sense to ask Rince Priebus, well, have you seen the tax returns, to say that Harry Reid is lying? That's the quality of journalism that's out there on mainstream media right now. This is Stephanopoulos, who is supposed to be he's supposed to be the star. He's supposed to be the best of the best. He's the top of the game. That's what mainstream media has evolved to. 866-987-8466. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Give me a call. Follow me at Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I want to know what you're thinking about. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You know, if you saw an article on the internet telling you that schools in Texas were trying to ban the teaching of critical thinking, you probably thought it was an article from The Onion or some weird off-the-cuff magazine. But the sad and scary truth is the Republicans in Texas are actually writing laws that would ban school teachers from teaching their students critical thinking. That is, how to analyze facts and data, how to form conclusions based on personal observations. They want to prevent children from developing critical thinking skills for very good reasons, because they don't want them to question authority. Daniel Wallace, investigative journalist for truthout.org, always there with a great story. Danny, I couldn't have made that up, could I? I mean, when I saw your story, of course, all of our researchers did the end of it. You were right on this story.
Well, it does sound like something out of The Onion, doesn't it? But so do so many things these days in America, Mike, that I'm just really not surprised. What has been interesting, though, is the backpedaling. Have you seen some of the backpedaling?
I have. It started after you came out with this article. So you exposed the Texas GOP, where they declare that they don't want critical thinking in schools. Now, they haven't abandoned it. You understand that. But they've taken it down off of their site, haven't they?
Well, I had a link there that if you click, you go right to the page, so that you have the evidence there in front of you, which all critical thinkers want is evidence for claims that are made. And so I wanted to give the readers evidence. And then the day after the article came out, they disabled the link, and then they came out with a number of very contradictory statements as to what really went on. One of them, of course, is that it was just a simple mistake.
Yeah.
And an oversight in the platform.
Well, you know better than that. And explain why that's a ridiculous response.
Well, it's a ridiculous response because what the Republican Party wants, as really any ruling class does, is people as low-hanging fruit. And people cannot be low-hanging fruit if they're critically thinking, if they're challenging the assumptions that are being made behind the claims that are being offered to them. If for example, the Republican platform mentioned that they didn't want outcome-based education, which is a code word.
Right. That is critical thinking. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
It's a code word, and critical thinkers know that, so they want people to, they want to be able to then say, well, when you say outcome-based education, what do you mean by that? And of course, that's critical thinking. They don't want that. People in power don't want to be questioned.
Well, here's the point. This theory about the fact that if we teach our children how to think critically, that they'll become more rebellious, they'll become disobedient, they'll foster revolution, and that is really at the heart of it. I mean, the discussion on this, if you follow these discussions, it is, if you allow a teacher to have the child question authority and question ideas in class, then they come home and they do the same thing. And from a standpoint of corporate America, they certainly don't want you questioning what the hell they're doing up on Wall Street. You don't want politicians who are corrupt. You don't want people questioning what they do. The church, when it does the damnedest things that it's been doing in the last 20 years, you don't want people questioning what is the church doing. And so in a perfect world, what you have is people who they're good at numbers. They can add, they can subtract, they can read, but they don't even understand the significance of what they're reading. When they read John Steinbeck, for example, if they read The Grapes of Wrath in John Steinbeck, a Steinbeck novel, they don't have the ability to take what that means and say, what does that mean today? How do I implant that idea today?
Very well said, yes, to make relevant what they're thinking or reading about in the case that you just mentioned. No, you're absolutely right, and what has been, of course, sold, basically what the Republican Party is interested in the constituency, of course, and to some extent the corporate Democrats as well, is a rigid hierarchy, and that hierarchy is not to be challenged. And therefore, no questioning is to take place. Unfortunately, in the hierarchy, the 1% are at the top, and the 99% of us are at the bottom. And so we're supposed to go to not just to educational centers, but to obedience centers, where we learn how to become low-hanging fruit for the corporate predators, who then makes us subsidize and pay for their privatization schemes, their J.P. Morgan gambling rackets, or their Goldman Sachs opening up just recently, for example, educational services within New York City jails, when they should be the ones that are in jail. So this all requires critical thinking and systematic thinking. If you can't think systematically, you can't see the systematic corruption, the systematic rot that's been institutionalized. And those in power, just like anybody in power that wants to keep power, doesn't want people to be thinking.
Well, you know, Howard Zinn, I know you've read plenty of Howard Zinn and plenty of Chalmers Johnson and Studs Terkel, you know, great thinkers in so many ways. But Chalmers Johnson in particular, I remember some of his writing talking about the idea that the way that the Catholic Church and it was used by the aristocracy, for example, in South America, was to use the thumb, the heavy hand of the church to keep people in line by not allowing them to question the aristocracy when they were paying slave wages, by not allowing them to question the aristocracy when they abused workers and took advantage of the economy of whatever country we're talking about. But they used the Catholic Church to do that because people weren't willing to question the authority of the Catholic Church. And
yes,
so
very good point.
That's the same kind of thing. That's where this, if you read their intent here, their intent is to say, we don't want people who can analyze and then ask those tough questions. Let me ask you something. There's actually public schools, actually the private schools there that are being built around the 501c3 nonprofit organizations. Something that you've written about is called the Idea Public Schools. What is that?
It's a bad idea.
It's
too bad Molly Ivins can't be with us.
Oh,
right
I know.
Now.
She was one.
Or Jim Hightower that came out of this.
I know.
But, no, Idea Schools is an idea that sprung up in Texas. It's basically backed by Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, as are many of these for-profit, or as you say, non-profit schools, at least on their boards. And the notion is, of course, to demonize public schools for teaching critical thinking, higher-order thinking skills, which then children come home and challenge. Or they challenge, and you so well said, the Wall Street. It's essentially to build a medieval school system.
You call it super. You call it
a neo-feudalistic society.
Yeah, you call it. I love the term you use in your writing so often is supernaturalism kind of thinking. But the idea of public school is spreading like wildfire throughout places like Texas, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and it's backed by people like J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Wall Street banking concerns. The money behind this, aren't they?
Well, sure, because the educational sector in this country is worth $600 billion. So if you can crack that nut open and destroy the public commons by privatizing it, you can make a fortune off of it, because then the taxpayers will pay the subsidy to these people to run what they call public schools, which in all fact and reality are private schools run by boards that have no disclosure requirements, no transparency. They can give contracts through the back door to for-profit schemes, their cronies, and that's exactly what's going on.
And they can teach. They can teach.
Created to take over schools, and of course, the last thing they want to do is teach.
Yeah, they can teach creationism. They can teach that global climate change is not real, that it's just a crazy conspiracy by lunatic liberals. So look, it's not just a Texas problem. In other words, they write these textbooks in Texas, but then these textbooks end up all over the country in some form or fashion, don't they?
That's correct, because of the it's based on the volume of sales, and Texas is so large. But the actual textbook cartel right now work in concert. Pearson out of England is really huge. They just bought Connections Academy, which is the second largest online earning or learning of system in the United States for K through 12 education. So we are basically seeing the financialization of education right now as it's being turned over to Wall Street interest, much like the subprime mortgages. It's the subprime education.
And so with that comes obedience training, with that comes anti-intellectualism, with that comes the fact that I saw this somewhere else also, Louisiana, they're actually teaching the kids that the Loch Ness Monster actually lives and is real. Did I get that right, or was that
It has to be, because otherwise it wouldn't conform to the thousand-year theory. Of creation.
But,
yeah, the Loch Ness Monster is a dinosaur. And since we saddled up the dinosaurs back then, the thing had to exist. And so it's being paid for in a textbook by public money in Bobby Jindal's Louisiana.
Danny, I swear to God, 10 years ago, if you and I had this discussion, they would think we were making this up. But it's true. I've got less than 30 seconds, and I just want to tell you that.
Can you imagine what other countries are thinking right now as they see us begin to really, really just hurtle ourselves into neo-feudalism and in a digital dark ages where people are denied the right to reason and kids are just replaced with bewilderment and supernatural.
China, Danny, China is gleeful. Thank you for joining me. You're always right on. You are a great writer, a great thinker, a great treasure where it comes to American intellect. Thank you for joining
me. Hey, thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Sure.
Good luck to all of you.
Thanks a lot. I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm Mike Papantonio in for Tom Hartman. Follow me at Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Mike Papantonio, standing in for Tom Hartman. Let me go to Kathy in Naples. Kathy, thank you for holding. I know you've been holding a long time. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I love your show.
Well, thanks. Tom has a great show. He was nice enough to allow me to stand in for him this week. I appreciate it, too.
I know, but you know what? Your show has gotten me really, really afraid in a lot of ways, because I've been trying to educate people around me as to what's happening in our own country, and nobody's listening.
Oh, you're in Naples, Florida. My God. You're kind of the
low-hanging fruit.
You're kind of the heart of the dragon down there. It's kind of like me
in Miami a lot.
Kind of like me in Pensacola.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the problem that you have to overcome, and this is the unfortunate thing, Kathy, is there's so much satire, crazy talk out there. I mean, it's almost... look, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, we would listen to Michelle Bachmann talking about the idea that President Obama has concentration camps set up by FEMA, and that teabaggers were being put in concentration camps and that they couldn't get out. We would have heard that. I mean, we would have asked that she receive psychological counseling from her very iffy husband. Or maybe if we would have heard this story that that the UN has an army getting ready to invade the United States at Obama's request to take our guns, we would have said probably not. But now there's the new story out is that Obama was married to a man before he married Michelle Obama. Now, why can they do that? They can do that because they know that especially within the cohort of teabaggers and Republicans, that there is a very large portion of them that are going to believe it. And if they don't believe it, they'll talk themselves into believing. So there is no difference between satire and reality anymore. It is a whole new reality because we have become – there's cohorts of the United States that have become so stupid – that there, it's almost useless to try to talk logic because you will hear that talking point for another month that Obama was married to a man before he married Michelle Obama. Vicki in Loveland, Colorado, you there?
I am currently rereading a book by Jerry Spence, The Rise and Risks of the New Conservative Hate Culture.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the news media and Nancy Grace, Ann Coulter, the Queen of Hate, Hate, the Road to Power, Laura Ingraham, For I Have Sinned, the saga of Bill O'Reilly, Cultivating of Hate in America. Anyway, these are all the people that we hear every day or hear about. And
well, it used to be, Vicki, let me know, it used to be that these people were the fringe, you see. But now we have a woman who, Ann Coulter, for example, who, you know, I as you probably know, I've been opposite these folks on news talks shows all the time. I used to do Fox regularly. And I had the four crazy people on one side of the table, and I'd be on the other, and I would hear the crazy talk. But now, it used to be fun, frankly, because it was like a free for all. It really was a lot of fun. But the truth is now what we used to consider fringe crazy is the norm. It's absolutely the norm. You have a woman like Ann Coulter who you may remember, she's the one who says that she wished that Tim McVeigh, who blew up the federal building in Oklahoma, she wishes that he had blown up the New York Times building in the middle of New York. She's the one who called the widows from 9/11 harpies, who were simply basically even suggesting that they were somehow whores or prostitutes. That's the way she characterized them, and said that they were simply trying to make money off of exposing George Bush of being an idiot. Well, we all knew he was an idiot. Ann Coulter didn't have to call them a name for something like that. We knew George Bush was an idiot. But she is the person that they have on ABC News, for example. They have her on talk shows. They have her as if we care what a crazy woman has to say, because that has become the norm. And what's happened, for example, the way that I approach Ring of Fire, Bobby Kennedy, myself, Sam Cedar, there's nothing about what we do that's warm and fuzzy. There's no moment where I try to address what the crazy right is saying to me other than to attack, attack, attack. Why do I do that? I've learned that that is the only thing that really works, is pushback and pushback. Because if they ever sense, if you'll ever sit down and talk to a psychologist about a bully mentality, a real crazy bully, will keep pushing you and pushing you because they get some kind of some excited edge about doing that. These people are no different. You cannot give them an inch. And sometimes I'm accused, Bobby Kennedy's accused, Sam Cedar's accused on Ring of Fire that we're too harsh. We are not too harsh. We simply are trying to address the level of crazy that exists in this country right now. And the only way you can do that is you can't be warm and fuzzy. You can't let a cat like this Dino Marino, who emailed me and told me that Obama was the worst president in history, you can't let that just say, okay, well, let me talk logic to you. You can't talk logic to them. And that's the point. So it is. It's a whole different environment out there. It's a complete different environment. Well, I got to thank all my guests. This has been a fun week. I thank Tom Hartman. Thank you. He'll be back next week. And I just want to tell you, this listening audience is a very smart audience. The questions you've had for me all week are just impressive that you have so much information. I'm Mike Papantonio. Follow me on Ring of Fire with Bobby Kennedy and Sam Cedar every weekend. Follow me on Twitter, Ring of Fire Radio. Thank you for letting me host this week. It's been fun. I'm gone. Thank you.
Listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.